One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
And I feel like our collective awareness of what is cool and what isn't cool and what other people will probably say about us if we do certain things, if we like do the weird thing, if we do the cringe thing, this like collective awareness, I don't know, is like the best thing ever. Right?
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. We're on a song party tonight and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly summer party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck. It is a beautiful day here in New York City. The sun is shining, the birds are chirping. We are famously reaching that time of year where I am full body jealous of anyone who has a balcony, a front porch, a back porch, a backyard, dare I say. I am so jealous of anyone that has a private outdoor space. You might be looking at the door behind me thinking that this is a balcony. It sort of is, but it's not. It's a smoker's balcony. So you can literally just stand out there. You can take one step and that's it. That's the whole thing. So I don't smoke, so I never use it. My friends like it, I guess. If they come over and they want to smoke and they don't want to leave the general vicinity, I guess that's great for those people. I'm not a smoker, so I get little to no use out of it. And I would just love to be able to wake up in the morning and go sit outside in my private little balcony with a cup of coffee and just like breathe in the fresh air. There's something about like the solitude of a private outdoor area that I would love. My building does have a nice rooftop, which famously I take advantage of. I'm up there all the time, and famously I feel like most other people in my building do not take advantage of it. Granted, a lot of people in my building have balconies. I'm just not one of them. So usually when I go up to the roof, there's not a lot of people up there. Usually it's just me and like maybe one or two other people, and the roof is big enough that you don't have to like be near anybody else. But my beef with the roof is this, which is number one, there's no area that's covered from the sun. So there's no place in the shade, which is fine for maybe a lot of other people. Not for me, because number one, I'm going to burn. I'm going to burn so quickly. But number two, I'm working on a computer, so I can't like go up and work on the roof because it's just going to be glare in my face the whole time. The second problem is that there's only one set of outlets on the roof, which I can sit by that one set of outlets, but then there's the sun. So I've got two problems. When I would just love if I had a little balcony right here and the balcony from the person on the floor above me could just block the sun and I could sit and I could edit and run my cords and cables and enjoy the outdoors while also doing my work. Oh God, it would just be so good. It would be so nice. So I'm so jealous of anybody that has a nice little outdoor space of their own, a private space with all the outlets they want, that they can throw an umbrella up if they want. I'm just, yeah, I wish it was me. Instead, I sit here on this couch, I sit at my desk, and I look out the window, and I think it would be so fun to be outside today. And I will not go outside today, probably. Maybe I'll go outside after this for a little bit. But then I'm like, I'm procrastinating doing things. I'm just gonna go be outside. But you know what? Shut up. We're not talking like that, because guess what's important for your mental health? Getting outside and enjoying your life, okay? You'll be more productive in the long run if you break up your day with fun little nice activities for your happiness, okay? Productivity is not more important than being happy and taking care of yourself. So you need to go see the sun today. Heard? Yes. Yes, ma'am. This is how I get through the day, right? This is what happens when you live alone and you do most of life by yourself. There's nobody that's going to like check you. So you have to learn how to check yourself. Did you hear? Did you just witness what just happened? I'm parenting myself in real time. Go get outside. Go play.
But I have to do this thing in my computer.
Don't give a shit. Go outside and stare at the sun for 20 minutes and then come back inside and see how you feel. Yes, ma'am. I do think that, I spend way too much time on my computer, and you know how I know this? My YouTube recommended. First of all, YouTube knows things about me that I myself have forgotten about. Like, my computer has so much data on me that the storage is better than the storage within my own brain. Because this week, my YouTube recommended me a video from like a decade ago of my camp counselors singing, not at camp, nothing to do with camp, but they happened to be my camp counselors a decade ago. This video is from a decade ago. It appeared on my YouTube recommended like morning playlist curated just for Maddie. It's a video of my old fucking camp counselors singing. I was like, this is weird. Why did they serve me this? And then I sent a little screenshot in the group chat of my theater camp friends. And I was like, you're never going to fucking believe what YouTube recommended I kick my day off starting with. And they were like, this is, you know, sometimes when I think about it, I think that it's all a dream. You know, all these memories that we have together, did we make them up? Like, I think about that same camp counselor who singing videos was recommended to me yesterday in the year 2024. He was one of the Abercrombie models that stood outside the door with his shirt off. So during the summer, he was our theater camp counselor. But then during the fall, he worked at the mall with his shirt off, which was a huge flex. Okay. In the year 2010, 2011 is when this was. Huge, huge flex to be able to go to the fucking Natick Mall and be like, yeah, I actually know the Abercrombie model. I actually spent all summer with the Abercrombie model. We're like fucking like 13, 14 years old. He's like a college student. So funny. We used to go to the mall and just be like, we're going to go see him. We're going to go say hi and just be like menaces. Ugh, how funny and silly was that? But the fact that YouTube knows this and like knew to recommend me a video of him singing a decade later so that it could conjure up these memories in my brain and be like, that was so fun. It was so fun to be 13 years old knowing one of the Abercrombie models at the Natick Mall. Like, yeah, that's my camp counselor. But also it must have been so fucking awkward for him. Imagine being a camp counselor and... And then when fall rolls around, your campers are taking group trips, okay, to the mall just to fucking annoy you while you're half naked out the door opening of Abercrombie. Oh God, it's so good. It was such a specific time to be alive. It's like you were either there for the era of naked men being posted up outside of Hollister's, Abercrombie's, and Gilly Hicks, or you weren't. You were either there and you loved it as much as the rest of us, or you were not there. Okay. Because what a time it was. I feel like I'm always reminiscing on that section of life. You're like tween and early teenage years. Just because there's so much to say and observe about that like section in someone's life. And I've been talking about it a lot this past week specifically. I think, I don't know, you know when you're like making friends as an adult and you're like, you get to tell them all these stories from your childhood because like they just weren't fucking there, you know? And so you're telling these stories from those years. And this past week, I told a few stories from those years to some of my friends that I've met more recently in my life. And I was just like reminiscing on like the girl I was and how much I love her, how much I love her. And it's funny because I was reminiscing on something very similar earlier on in the year, just thinking about how totally unapologetic and like seemingly blissfully unaware of other people's opinions that I was when I was a teenager. And I was talking to my friends this week about the performances I did at the talent shows when I was in high school. And just generally a lot of the performance stuff that I did. Because yes, I was a theater kid. I did community theater all throughout middle school and some of high school, and I went to theater camp every summer. I never did my high school plays though. I wasn't involved in like the school theater. I did outside of school extracurricular theater unassociated with the school. But most of my like high school years, I was at the dance studio. So theater was like taking more of a backseat the older that I got. And I just feel like the girl I was at that age, I'll try to explain her to you because I love her so much and I think you're going to love her too. And maybe some of you were here when she existed because that's how long I've been on the internet. You have to know that the time period first, really, where we're talking 2008 to 2013, let's call it. So we are in the age of Lady Gaga. And I have been the biggest Lady Gaga fan for her whole career. I've loved Lady Gaga since Just Dance. Lady Gaga, and you know what? She connects to this era of my life and how I became who I am so intensely. I can't even explain it to people enough. She made me feel, her music made me feel like I was cool. Lady Gaga was like the first person in the world that ever made me feel like my too muchness was cool and it was a good thing. And all of her music, her performances, what she stood for, I just felt like I consumed her art and was like, God, finally someone who gets it. And she gave me permission to be myself in such a big and over the top way. And you can tell by a lot of the stuff that I did when I was around that age. And I was so unapologetic about all of it. So I was talking to my friends about how I believe it was my sophomore year of high school, for the talent show, I decided to do a Lady Gaga tribute. I love her. I love her so much. Most people for their talent shows, you know, they get up there with a guitar and they just sing. And that's like most high school talent shows, I feel, is like an overwhelming amount of singers doing acoustic sets and then like some rogue additional people. Maybe there's like a tap dancer or a beatboxer. I don't know. I'm trying to think of other talents people might do at a talent show. At my school, it was definitely overwhelmingly people just singing with guitars. I decided I wanted to do a Lady Gaga tribute performance. Extravaganza. And I started by doing a monologue from Lady Gaga's Monster Ball tour, which is like the monologue that she did right when she got on stage. Then I sang a little bit, and then it went into choreography, and I had backup dancers come out, and we did the official Born This Way choreography. It was a whole production, a whole performance, because I was raised by Lady Gaga, okay? I was raised to be an entertainer, mama. I was not here to just be pretty and sound pretty. I was here to entertain the people, okay? For better or for worse, I was going to give people something to talk about. And you can tell that this is something she really did. She shaped my brain in such a profound way. I've never gone back and watched these videos of the talent shows that I did, because it was every time I did a performance, it was always like this. It was never like I could just, I never wanted to like, I'm just going to go sing and show off my voice. I'm just going to go dance and show off this. I needed to do a production always. That's just who I am. But I was telling some of my friends about this, and I went back in curiosity to like try to watch these videos, and I literally couldn't do it. I was like, oh, I love her so much. Do not mix up my words here. it was so painful to me because it's just like, it is so like authentic and like raw off the cuff. Like I watch that version of myself and I'm like, I can't believe this is me. I can't believe I did that. Oh my God. And I feel like screaming. And it's not really because I'm embarrassed, but because it's just like such a bold thing to do. And I seemingly didn't know that it was so bold. I was like, I got up on stage. This is as much as I watched, because I was like, I actually can't listen to more. The first line of that Lady Gaga monologue is, she goes, "My name is Lady Gaga." She screams. So that's exactly what I did. Are you kidding? I was right. I was the whole monologue. I had an outfit. I had makeup done. I came into the monologue. The lights in the whole theater are up, okay? They couldn't get the audience lights to go down. So this is just like a perfectly well-lit fluorescent lighting auditorium. When I said I was weird growing up, I meant it. Like when I told you guys I was bullied, I don't know what you thought this was, okay? Not only was I making weird YouTube videos, I was also doing shit like this. And I think it is so cool. And I love that version of myself so much. And even though it is admittedly cringe, and I will, when, as I've said, I like cringe. I think it's a good thing. And it like ignites something inside me to know that like I was capable of that as a child, which like to me, I look back at that era and I'm like, that was the era of my life where I was the most self-conscious about myself. I had like the worst self-esteem. I was the most self-conscious. And somehow I was able to do things like that in a room full of people that I knew were going to make fun of me, I chose to do something that I was passionate about, that I wanted to commit to just go and do the whole thing. Like I love the like, I don't know, the authenticity of that, to like show up as yourself completely, even when you know people are going to make fun of you for it and it's not the coolest thing, and just commit and go all out and have the bravery to be just unapologetic about the things that you enjoy. I love it. And anyways, I don't know what the point of bringing all of this up is. I just know that I feel so struck by the girl that I was and the girl that I still am. Let's not pretend like she's not still here. But I feel like I feel particularly struck by having those traits at that age, like being 12, 13, 14, 15, and being like the most insecure I ever was in my life. Being bullied by kids in school and still choosing to be like the boldest, most authentic version of myself possible, to like live in my too muchness. And it really was Lady Gaga that gave me permission to do that. But I just look back on the talent show videos and the choreography I did for dance competitions and all of the creative stuff I did when I was a teenager that everyone thought was like so weird and cringe. And they're not wrong. It was. It's just that they saw that as a bad thing and I saw that as a great thing because of people like Lady Gaga. And having to like tell those stories to people who know me now and didn't know me then, I relive them and I tell them, and I'm like, I showed my friends a little bit of the video and I was like, I actually cannot show you more than this because I can't even personally myself watch it. But it's like, I'm aware that it's not, that this was never going to be seen as cool in high school. I'm fully aware that that was never going to be the thing. But to me, it is. To me, it is, and it always was. To me, like, choosing to be your, like, boldest, most authentic, choosing to be your boldest, most authentic self, unapologetically doing the big weird things simply because that's who you are and it makes you feel good and inspired, and you know, you're leaning into the things that light you up inside, I think that's cool. And I think I just, when I look back at that time, I feel like very inspired by that version of myself. That it's not that I was unaware of the fact that I was going to get bullied more by doing a lot of the things that I was doing, but it's that I always thought they were wrong. I never like believed my bullies as a kid. I was always like, yeah, I hear you. I hear you for sure. Too bad you're a fucking moron. I think I started taking things more personally the older that I got and the more like beat down I was. Maybe I just wasn't beat down enough then. And I was able to like hear shitty things, hear negative things and be like, yeah, but you're wrong. Yeah, but actually you have terrible taste. You know, I had spent years defending Lady Gaga at that point. That's the other thing. I don't know what it was like where you guys were growing up, but in my hometown, people like made fun of Lady Gaga, which in a weird way, I felt like it helped me because like obviously Lady Gaga, massive superstar, especially in that era. People liked her music, or at least some of it, the like popular songs, Poker Face, Bad Romance, Telephone. But if you had a conversation about Lady Gaga as like an artist or like a person, people were rude. I remember having to like go to war before like every album drop, every award show, anything that Gaga was doing, I had to like come to school like prepared to fight for her. Don't even talk to me about when Art Pop came out, her best album, the best album that's ever came out ever in the world. Changed things up right there, okay? But do you know how hard I had to defend Art Pop? Like harder than I've ever defended anything in my life, okay? And it's like, maybe there was part of me also that I heard so many people saying bad things about Lady Gaga, who in my eyes was like the most brilliant person I had ever come across in this life. So the fact that anybody could look at Lady Gaga and not understand her and not be like, this is incredible and groundbreaking and like totally not ever been fucking done before. The fact that anybody could look at Lady Gaga and not like her, I think made me feel better when people didn't like me or didn't get me. Because I was like, if they don't like her, clearly they have bad fucking taste. If they don't get her, clearly I'm learning something right now about like, there are some people in the world that like, if you get it, you get it. And if you don't, you don't. And clearly these bitches fucking don't. I didn't respect their opinion, I guess. But then you get older and you have people be mean to you that you do respect the opinion of, and then you get beat down. And then you have to, at some point, go through like a second puberty, which I feel like I have very much been in for like the last year and a half, 2 years, even maybe, where I feel like I am relearning how to connect with the version of myself I was before I was beat down by the world. You know, I feel like I've always believed in myself heavily and always been in my own corner, thought what I do is cool, and have been very like on my team even when other people were not. Like, I don't know. I feel like, yes, I struggle with like self-esteem issues the same way as anybody else does, but I have never stopped believing in myself or like co-signing why I'm great and why I'm cool. You know, I can have insecure moments the same as everyone else does. I'm not a superhuman. Fucking everybody has moments like that. But I've never once not been like ready to buy into myself if I had to. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's not like that version of myself is lost or that it was ever lost. You know, she's always been inside of me. But I do think that there's like a level of unapologetic, like, committed to yourselfness that I had as like a 15-year-old that I really crave to have again now. And I feel like I'm doing my best to reconnect with that side of myself and to like pick apart why it is that I feel more like self-conscious now than I did then. Or I don't even know if self-conscious is the right word, because it's not like, let me try to explain what I'm thinking inside my brain. Hopefully somebody out there gets what I'm talking about. When I was younger, I had very low self-confidence when it came to my appearance and like aesthetic-based things. When I was younger, I had very high confidence when it came to like my talents and skills. I think I had great support when I was a child growing up when it came to like my talents and skills. So even when I was bullied at school, I had a lot of people that I looked up to really affirm me throughout those years. So I had creative teachers and like camp counselors that really encouraged me and made me feel like I was talented. And then paired with the Lady Gaga stuff, I was like, these people just have bad taste, right? Because the people that I respect had high opinions of my talents and skills. But I had very low self-esteem when it came to like my appearance, aesthetics, and like, yeah, things like that. And then I got older. And I think my self-confidence in terms of like my talents and skills has remained the same. I think that my self-confidence when it comes to my appearance has gone way up, and I am way more confident now than I was then. That's not to say everything is perfect. You guys know I talked in the last episode about how things have been tough recently with everything going on, and I'm not done talking about that yet. I have so many things to say. But I think there's been like a third thing that has come into play as an adult that maybe didn't even exist at all when I was younger. But this third thing that has impacted my like self-consciousness, I guess, is how attuned I am to the opinions of other people and how they impact the choices that I make on a day-to-day basis. Not that I was blissfully unaware of what was cool and what wasn't cool and what other people thought when I was younger, but I just literally didn't care. Like, it didn't take up any brain space of mine. I could know that, you know, me doing a Lady Gaga tribute at the fucking talent show wasn't going to be cool. I never thought that it was going to be cool to them, but it was cool to me. And that was genuinely all that mattered. And I didn't think about it farther than that. To me, it was super fucking cool. And I was like, it made me feel cool. I thought that people that got it, people that were gonna get it, would think it was cool. And the people that weren't gonna get it, I didn't care about them. This changed when I got older. And it was like this thing inside my head that differentiates between like the people that get it and the people that don't, like went away. And it became like, okay, everyone is just someone who's giving me feedback and spitting reactions to me and the things that I'm making, the things that I'm doing. And I'm taking feedback in from so many people, but I have no system to weed out what feedback is worth taking and what isn't. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it was just like with the like eras of the internet that we've gone through since I was a young teenager to now, the sheer volume of feedback we have to take in from other people, whether it's people reacting directly to us or like the general what's cool and what's not isms of the internet that come in and out of season. Like, I don't know what it is exactly. It's probably a lot of different things. But I feel that it is much harder now to differentiate between feedback that you should take to heart and feedback that you shouldn't. And I think that that is the thing that stifles the part of myself that wants to be the version of my 15-year-old self that decided to do a Lady Gaga tribute at a talent show in an auditorium full of people that were going to think it was weird. I didn't care. So I've just been thinking about how to get closer to that part of myself. She never left. She's always been here. But it has been harder to access her in the way it was so easy to access that part of myself when I was younger. I literally didn't think about it. It literally didn't cross my mind. I was just like, yeah, it's cool to me. And I'm right. You know, and now I'm like, it's cool to me, but I'm very aware that other people are not going to think something is cool, or like, I know what some of the reactions are going to be ahead of time. And I think I feel like I need to get ahead of it and like respond to people in advance, respond to their stupid fucking comments. But it's like that in itself, having that part of your brain always be able to predict the criticism, always be able to predict what's wrong about something that you're doing. It's like it eventually starts to like stifle yourself a little bit because you're always like preparing for what's going to be wrong about what you said or what someone's going to take issue with. And I wish I could just say what I say and be like, and fuck you guys. You know, the people that get it, the people that don't. I'm not really trying to change people's minds. Like, I think about like the body image content I'm doing specifically and things I want to talk about. My goal has never been to change fat phobes' minds. My goal has always been to give people that feel the way that I feel and that relate to the things that I'm talking about a space where they can exhale and be like, oh, thank God. I'm looking to provide relief to people. You know, I don't need to, my goal audience is not fat phobes. Let me put it that way. Like in last week's episode or in my last YouTube video, which was titled, being fat doesn't stop me from dressing, having better style than you or something like that. I don't make content like that for fat phobes. If they watch it, I will bully them in the video for sure. I am yelling at them in the video. I don't make content like that for fat phobes. Right. I make content like that for the people that can relate to what I'm saying, that can hear it and be like, oh, thank God, and have like a moment of relief. Or I make it for people who that want to be better friends and better supporters to the fat people in their life and just want to like learn how to better show up for them. That's great, too. You know, I there's no like one demographic of people that I make content for. But the point that I'm making here is that subconsciously, I feel like I end up like jumping to fight with every person that doesn't get what the fuck I'm talking about. Like the people that are going to hear me, well, I'll just use this as an example. Like last week when I was talking about how I've been having a hard time with self-esteem recently and it's just been like rough. We're in like an era of the internet that seems to be regressing back to like the early 2000s era. We've got, you know, plastic surgery on the rise, Ozempic's all the rage. Like we're just in like a we're getting shittier. We're regressing for sure with like our body image conversations on social media, in media in general, whatever. When I talked about that, I knew that there were going to be people in the comments that were basically going to be like, oh, you had a bad body image day? You had a bad body image week? You don't like yourself? Then why don't you stop being delusional and lose weight, fatty? Like, I knew that there were going to be loser idiots that comment things like that. I knew it. And I could have, and a version of myself probably would have, responded to them preemptively in the episode to be like, and you, by the way, before you even say it, shut the fuck up. I still do that sometimes. I do that all the time. What am I talking about? I preemptively yell at people all the time, because I know that those comments are coming, and they did come. Don't worry. I deleted them right when I saw them, because my thing is like, you're not going to be an idiot in my comment section. Go be an idiot literally anywhere else. The content isn't for you. You don't like me. You don't get it. Get the fuck out. And I think I would like to go back to a time where I didn't feel like I had to change their minds. Like I didn't feel like I had to change their opinions of me or of about fat people in general, where I feel like it wasn't on my shoulders to change every fat phobe's opinion. You know what I mean? It was just up to me to do what I need to do, say what I need to say, connect with people I need to connect with, and keep it moving. If you don't like me, if you don't like what I do, if you don't resonate with this at all, and you just constantly are like, what the fuck is this bitch talking about? I don't like her. Like, okay, that's on you. Keep it moving then. The bitches that get it, get it. The bitches that don't. I want to get back to the version of myself that's like, the people that don't get it, I literally do not care what they say because they don't get it. And it's not my job to make them get it. And that's something I'm trying to work on. That's something I'm absolutely trying to work on. I'm trying to, like, when somebody says something that lets me know that they clearly do not fucking get it, to put my hands up and say, well, that's not my fucking job to make them get it. These people clearly have an issue that makes it so that they cannot see me in like my full glory. And it's not my job to make them see me that way. So that's that. I think that's what I miss so much about my younger self, is how like I would make art, I would do things, I would put myself out there, and how people reacted to me was literally none of my business. I was like, yeah, some people are gonna fucking hate this, it's gonna be weird and cringe to them, but they're gonna be dumb for that. It was weird and cringe, but it was cool. It was cool that I was doing a thing that I wanted to do, that I was passionate about, that I was being myself unapologetically. If you could look at that and be like, yeah, she's weird and she's cringe, but she's fucking free, you'd be correct. But instead, there were people that were like, she's weird and she's cringe, and therefore, let's bully her, weirdo. You know? But it's the lack of care that I had back then. I was aware of it. I knew what people thought. I literally didn't care at all. And I care a little bit now. That's the truth. The truth is that I have to care a little bit because it fires me up so much. And I read comments that just like misunderstand me completely, or just like they don't get it. They clearly don't get it. And my gut instinct is to be like, and I'm going to fight back. I'm going to change your mind. I'm going to make you see me the way I want you to see me. And I don't think that that's good for people. I don't think it's good for me to do that. Anyways, I know I just went on a little bit of a rant, a little bit of a tangent, and I hope that it made sense in the end. I hope I connected some thoughts together by the end there. Because it is like a little chaotic inside my brain. So I'm just sort of like laying it all out here at the sleepover, and we can piece things together, you know, as we go. This can be an ongoing conversation. I think I just feel really inspired by my younger self and how unapologetic I was and how like truly committed I was to being myself and doing what I thought was cool regardless of what anybody else thought. My confidence in my own sauce was just like record high at that age. And I love it. And that is still inside of me, and it's still actively a part of me. Those things didn't ever go away, right? But I do think that I have like much more of an awareness of what other people think of me now than I cared about then. And in some ways, I think it's good to have an awareness of what other people might think of what you do and say and whatever, but there's a level to it, you know? I envy the part of myself that wasn't always preemptively thinking about how people were going to react to me. I could have done that when I was 15. I wasn't oblivious to what other people thought of me. I just didn't care enough to give it that much attention. Now I care enough to give it that much attention. And part of it is because I do kind of love fighting with idiots. Like, I would be lying if I said there wasn't a part of me that's like, I do get off a little bit on being able to yell at people that I think are stupid. I'd be lying if I said I didn't enjoy it at least a little bit. If I hated it genuinely and completely, I wouldn't do it. So I don't know. I need to think about this. I think it's interesting how, like, how we change and how things shift as we go deeper into like the age of social media. And I feel like our awareness of other people's opinions of ourselves has gotten way too high. And I feel like our collective awareness of what is cool and what isn't cool and what other people will probably say about us if we do certain things, if we like do the weird thing, if we do the cringe thing, this like collective awareness, I don't know, is like the best thing ever. Right? Like, I think that having a certain level of awareness of like what is socially acceptable is a good thing to some degree, but it can be overdone. And I fear that in the age of social media, it is being far overdone. But like, how much of anticipating what other people might think of you, like, to what point are you just stifling yourself? Like, at what point can the collective be wrong? Has social media made it harder to identify when the collective is wrong? You know what I'm saying? We're thinking, we're cooking. I don't know. We'll come back to this. We'll loop back at some point. All right, let's get into some audience submissions. If you don't know, there is a submission box for the show where you can submit anything and everything that you would like, anything you'd like to bring up at the sleepover, secrets, stories, am I the assholes, anything. Okay, I will open it up and I will pretend that we are in a slumber bag circle just kicking our feetsies up. I'm purposely saying slumber bag at this point. I hope you guys know that. Anyways. I had a meltdown over a haircut. Let me explain. The hairdresser added layers, which I didn't want, and I found myself being completely consumed thinking about how long it would take to grow it out and feel beautiful. I don't look terrible or anything, but there's this feeling that I could look better, which makes me feel bad. Like I have to be the most optimized, beautiful version of myself because the haircut doesn't suit my face shape. There's so much looks maxing content out there. There's so much looks maxing content out there, and I used to consume a lot of it. Kibbe body types, seasons, haircuts for your face shape, etc. I no longer consume this content as it has made me obsessive, and I started to view all the things pertaining to my appearance as right or wrong. I cannot, however, turn off that voice that tells me I don't look like my most optimized self. I float between feeling bad about my appearance and then feeling bad about being so shallow / putting so much weight into my appearance in the first place. I have such a terrible relationship with exercise too. I try to reframe it and say it's for my health, but when I'm working out, I can only focus on what I don't like and wanting to see it change. I don't like how much I focus on my body during exercise, and so I find myself not working out at all. Is working out in hopes of changing your body a bad thing? How do I make positive changes without feeling like my only motive is my unhappiness with what I see in the mirror? How do I have compassion for myself? I am so exhausted and tired of equating however attractive I feel to my self-worth. While I'm aware of this problem, it is so deep-rooted that I don't know where to begin, and I cannot handle any more fake it till you make it confidence advice on this. I would love to hear your thoughts, as you are always insightful and kind. P.S. Love the pod and love being a lover girl. Well, let me start off by saying that I, too, have had meltdowns about haircuts before, so don't you fucking worry about it. Right before I went to college, I decided I was going to cut my hair, which I don't know why I decided that this like big transitionary moment was going to be the right time to make like a huge physical transformation, but I did, and I cut my hair to like my shoulders right before I went to college and put layers in it, and learned very quickly that I prefer myself with long hair. I also think like what was interesting for me, this was like my learning that came from all of it, which is why I won't cut my hair short like that ever again, is because I love how it looks on other people. And I always watched other people get haircuts and have like short hair and be like, oh, that must be like, so it must feel like so freeing and so like a literal weight lifted off your shoulders. Like it must just feel so like breezy and like lightweight and fun. And I quite literally felt the opposite when I cut my hair. I felt like claustrophobic. It was like when I have long hair, it's like it flows down and away from my face and down my back, and it's just like away and I can breathe. And then the second I had short hair, it was like it's always here. It's always right next to my face and next to my neck, and I'm just like, ah. It was like a sensory issue for me where I was like, when I had short hair, I felt like I was always being suffocated by my hair, versus when it's longer, it's like I can breathe. When it's short, I'm just like, oh my God, it's all here. The problem is also that I have thick hair. So when I had my hair short, it was like, there was so much of it right next to my face at all time with nowhere else to go, versus when you have long, thick hair, then you can like put it places. It has other places to go, you know? I don't know. I don't know if anybody else has experienced that, but that's how I learned that I also prefer myself with long hair. And I don't think there's an issue with having a preference for how you like your hair to look. I think it's the thing to keep an eye on is more just how you speak about yourself. It's fine to know, yeah, I definitely prefer myself with long hair, the same way I now prefer myself with purple hair. Where I would start to have a problem is if I was being like, I was so fucking ugly back then. I looked so terrible when I had short hair and was like shitting on myself because of it. That's when it takes a turn, just because it's like, you don't need to talk about yourself like that. And there doesn't need to be like a hierarchy of, I don't know, versions of yourself, different values that you had based on your physical appearance. It's fine to realize that you like yourself with longer hair versus shorter hair, or hair without layers versus with layers. But I wouldn't shit on the version of yourself that has the short hair, has the layers, you know? We can acknowledge it without taking a turn into like being mean to ourselves. And I do think it's good to be aware of the fact that there is a pressure to be like our most beautiful and most optimized selves at all times. That's definitely worth acknowledging. All of us want to feel beautiful though. And yes, we need to monitor like what level of importance that's taking in our lives for sure. And like how attached our mental well-being is to this like ever-changing image of what beautiful is, and also being aware of like how influenced our image of beautiful is by media versus like how we truly feel, which I think is important to like sort out and dig into. So it's good to be like measured about it, but to expect yourself to not care about feeling beautiful at all is silly, because of course you want to feel beautiful, and it's totally fine to want to care about feeling beautiful. It's good to be measured about it, to be critical, to ask yourself, why do I feel this way? But to expect yourself to not care about beauty at all is silly. Of course you're going to care about beauty. You know, we can be critical towards like the emphasis put on beauty and aesthetics and at the same time still enjoy them. You know what I mean? I'm very critical about the beauty standards and how we accept certain things as being like in trend or beautiful versus not beautiful. But at the same time, while having all of those criticisms, I'm someone who puts a lot into my physical appearance. I spend hundreds of dollars to get my hair colored. I do my nails every month. I have a lot of tattoos. I spend a lot of money on skincare and makeup. Like, I pour a lot into beauty as well. So it's not about getting rid of your desire to feel beautiful. It's not about getting rid of how you care about beauty. It's just about looking at it through like a more critical lens and having sort of like a balance in how much weight we put in our care for aesthetics. But it's not about getting rid of them. We all want to feel beautiful. That's totally normal. Now, moving down to what you talk about in the second half of your submission, you say that you have a really terrible relationship with exercise and you try to reframe it and say it's for your health. But when you're working out, you can only focus on what you don't like about yourself physically and wanting to see it change, which is really difficult. And I just want to say that I completely empathize with you. And I myself have struggled most of my life in having a healthy relationship with exercise. And I, very similarly to you, for years chose not to work out and not to move my body because it was just too emotionally difficult for me. And it's one of those things that if you haven't personally experienced it, you might not be able to fully understand what it's like. But it is so difficult to find enjoyment in physical movement when every time you engage in it, your brain is just on like a loop of being mean to yourself, on a loop of all of the worst thoughts you can have about yourself for like an hour. And I really struggled with that. The second I wasn't dancing anymore, I've talked about this a lot on my YouTube channel, but I danced through all of my like middle and high school years, and that was how I got my movement in. And I loved dance so much. It was so fun to me that I hardly even realized I was exercising. So dance, funny enough, because I know this is not the case for a lot of people, but funny enough, for me, dance was something that I could do. And it was like, I never thought about my body when I was dancing. I never had those negative thoughts when I was dancing. But all other kinds of exercise, I really felt hyper aware of my body and being really critical about my body. I couldn't just move my body for fun. If I was exercising, I felt like I could only focus on the aesthetics and like how the movement might change my body. And it's painful and it's hard and it's so emotional. And I just want you to know that like that's something that many of us struggle with. And it is hard, because I know sometimes, and I even feel this way too, that it's like sometimes I watch other people and their relationships with exercise and movement, and I'm like, I'm envious of how easy it seems to some people, because it's been like such an intentional task of mine to try to heal my relationship with food and movement specifically and find ways to bring joyful movement back into my life as an adult. And it really is like a fucking feat. And it is hard not to compare yourself to others who you perceive not to have that same struggle. So just know that I see you and I understand what you're feeling completely. For me, two things that have helped immensely before I get into the rest of my response to this: a weight neutral nutritionist and a therapist. The reality is that for a lot of us, our mental and physical health is like really intertwined. I know for me, it absolutely is. And so having these two healthcare professionals to help me make good choices for myself and keep my head screwed on in the process has been huge for me. Having a weight neutral nutritionist was huge for me, and she helped me a lot in like working through a lot of the like worries and like limiting beliefs I had inside my brain when it came to like food and movement and things I had learned about nutrition and moving my body when I was younger that I needed to like rip apart and build new. My weight neutral nutritionist, she taught me a lot about like building better meals for myself, how to do that, what works with my schedule and my habits, what is going to be the easiest for me to incorporate. And I met with her like every 2 weeks at the start, and then we moved to doing check-ins like every month and a half. And then I stopped seeing her about a year ago because I felt that I had learned enough throughout my time seeing her, and I was in a place where I felt secure in the habits that we had built. And because she was a weight neutral nutritionist, weight loss was not something we discussed at all. It was not a priority of mine. It was not something that we talked about at all. And that's a choice that I made consciously, understanding my history with my body, my history with an eating disorder, and what I need to feel better and to make good choices for myself. I sought out a weight neutral nutritionist because I wanted to learn how to live a healthier life for myself, but I cannot have that linked to my weight because that's how I spiral and that's how it all gets emotional and heavy for me. The thing was this, is that I'm trying to learn how to make healthier habits for myself, how to make long-term changes in my relationship with food and movement. None of that has to do with my appearance. It's not an aesthetic thing. I want to know more. I want to have more information at my fingertips when it comes to understanding my health and making good choices for myself. That has nothing to do with what I look like. So for me, going to a weight neutral nutritionist was the best way for me to get access to information that can help me live a healthier life, help me make better nutritional choices, you know, building more balanced meals for myself, and also reconnecting with joyful movement. Movement not as punishment, but as like a way to express like how great it is to be alive and have a body and get to run around outside. I used to talk about how me and my nutritionist, we called working out recess for a while because that simple word shift helped me feel better. It helped me feel like, oh, this is fun. I get to go outside and go on a walk. It's my recess time, my break in the middle of the day, you know, like I'm not working out. It's recess. It's so much fun. And then when I started going to the dance studio again and like reignited my love of dance, it was so fun and like such a relief to get to find these things and enjoy them and never have my weight brought up once. To just like explore what living a healthier life could look like for me, to learn more about my body and about nutrition without ever punishing myself or feeling bad in the process. To me, I care about like the choices that I'm making, how I'm showing up for myself, and mentally how those choices make me feel. That's what I care about. The number on the scale is not important to me. I know what choices I'm making in my day-to-day life. I care about like living a lifestyle that is A, sustainable to me, and B, like makes me feel like confident and happy with the choices that I'm making. I want to be living a healthy life. I care about doing that. And part of that means also taking care of my mental health, which is also why I'm in therapy and have been for years. And talking about body image and working through the things I learned about myself when I was younger, you know, insecurities that have been with me for a lot of my life has been huge. And I wanted to finish off by touching on a question that you asked in here. As you said, is working out in hopes of changing your body a bad thing? Which I have a complicated answer to, because it is a complicated question. Number one, I'll say this is not a yes or no question, because there are situations where the answer is yes, it's totally fine. And there are situations where the answer is no, that's probably not the best. If you are someone who has long struggled with eating disorders, body dysmorphia, and having a healthy relationship with your body, no, I do not think that you should undergo intentional weight loss without the supervision of a healthcare professional. And generally, I encourage everyone to start separating health and aesthetics, because I think that it helps us think clearer and speak clearer about the why behind, you know, certain preferences we have or why we're doing certain things. This is really what I was talking about in last episode as well, where when I was talking about it in terms of like plastic surgery, where I don't care what other people do. You make whatever decision you make for yourself, right? I think that we should be asking ourselves why more often. I think we should be looking at ourselves and asking ourselves, why do I want to do this? What made me believe that this is like the best choice for me right now? How did I learn this about myself? Where did it come from? I think we need to be asking ourselves why and digging deeper into these feelings, rather than just being like, well, I hate myself, so I'm going to change myself, and not thinking any deeper about it. You know, I think that wanting to heal your relationship with food and movement, find a way to build more nutritious meals for yourself, find a way to go to the gym and work out without feeling terrible about yourself. These are wonderful things, you know, that I will always encourage. But I think some of us require some additional mental support when pursuing things like that in order to stay nice to ourselves and to like stay set on healing the parts that matter rather than focusing on the things that don't. I've learned what triggers me and what my like hard spots are. And for me, it is easier for me to make good choices and to focus on my healing when I don't have that number to distract me. Because it's not about that. It's not about my weight. It's not about the number on a scale. It's not about my physical appearance. It's about the habits that I'm making and changes that I'm making to my lifestyle that I can keep up in the long term. Everything else is just aesthetics, and it's fleeting, and it's not important. So you know what? If my doctors tell me that I'm doing a good job and my labs look fantastic and I know that I'm making healthy choices for myself and I am making huge strides when it comes to changing my relationship with these things, then fat phobes on the internet be gone, okay? What is better for me is working on developing better habits that I can sustain in the long term and completely disconnecting health from aesthetics. That is how I can pursue healing my relationship with food and movement in a way that is kind to myself, good for my mental health, and is something that I can sustain for a long period of time, which is the goal, right? My goal is to live a healthier life, not to be smaller. I want you to know that it's possible. It's possible to have a healthier relationship with movement, finding forms of movement that don't trigger you, working through it with professionals, figuring out how to best cater to your brain. Body image stuff goes so deep, and I just really encourage people to get the proper support they can if they have access to it, because it's tough and it's heavy and it's hard to do it alone. And I think, unfortunately, there's a lot of people on the internet that just like, they have no compassion for other people in this department. And I mean, this is added to by the fact that like fat phobia has been so rampant recently, and it's a lot. So I just want you to know that you're not alone, that I have felt the way that you do before, and that I promise you there is movement to be made. There are ways to feel better, that it is possible to build a healthier lifestyle for yourself without shitting on yourself all the way through. You know, it is possible to heal your relationship with movement, to find forms of movement that make you feel good without always using it as a vessel to beat yourself down, right? We are constantly changing. Our bodies will change throughout our lifetime in many different ways. And I think that it is beneficial to all of us to learn how to love ourselves, our bodies, in all of their many forms. I don't think that we should ever look back on our body at this time or our body at this time and shit on those versions of ourselves. I think that pursuing a healthier lifestyle is always great. Figuring out how to do that so that you can stay mentally healthy at the same time is going to look different for different people. I can tell you what it was like for me, but ultimately you might not be the same as me. And figuring out what is going to be the best for you is going to be a journey of your own that I really hope you're able to get proper support on. But just know that it's possible, to heal those parts of yourself and to improve the kind of relationship you have with your body image, with exercise, with, you know, aesthetics and beauty and the pressure to change yourself to fit a certain mold. It is hard. It is heavy. I still think about it all the time. This is a subject that will be at the top of my brain until I die, you know? But it gets easier over time and with the right support. So Godspeed and good luck to you. And just know that there are a lot of people in this audience that can relate to what you're feeling right now. Oh my God. I didn't expect to talk so long for that one submission, but I guess body image stuff is just top of my brain right now. I'm still working on a YouTube video about this kind of stuff. So a lot of body image content coming from me, but we're just following the spark, following what I'm most interested in talking about right now. And I think that it's a good reminder to people right now. I want everyone to know that I intend to remain a safe space for plus size people forever. I feel really passionately about making sure that my content remains a safe space within these topics. And you won't have to worry about me. You will not have to worry about me. So anyways, keep an eye out for the YouTube video that I'm working on within this general topic range. I'm thinking it'll be out next week. So with that, I love you guys so much. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next week.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest. Life comes at you fast, which is why it's important to find some time to relax. A little you time. Enter Chumba Casino. With no download required, you can jump on anytime, anywhere for the chance to redeem some serious prizes. So treat yourself with Chumba Casino and play over 100 online casino-style games, all for free. Go to ChumbaCasino.com to collect your free welcome bonus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.